Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahabiryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay. So on page 22, Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 1, but just at the Anucheda from the page before. It is illogical to say that the name Brahman or consciousness, which becomes endowed with vidya, knowledge, when giving shelter to Maya, becoming Ishwar, then becomes overpowered by avidya, ignorance, when subject to Maya as a jiva. Right? Because they're saying is that the supreme Brahman is that it has knowledge, it gives shelter to Maya, and then it becomes overwhelmed by Maya, and then in that state of ignorance, even though it's given the knowledge to Maya, then it becomes overwhelmed by ignorance from that Maya, and now it becomes a jiva. Right? So it doesn't make a lot of sense, right? Yeah. From the verses quoted from Bhagavatam, it's understood that the swarups of Ishwar and Jiva are different, being different in the abilities of their swarups. So now the Purva Paksha, right? This will be the argument against this. Right? Baladevi Dibhushan. Purva Paksha, the one Brahman, which is mere consciousness, without qualities, is described as the ultimate reality in Shruti's statements, like Yat Tu Ekam Eva Dvitiyam. Right? So, now they're bringing out the point that they're saying Brahman is just consciousness. They don't want to acknowledge anything beyond that. And so, it has no qualities. That's their whole point that they're trying to do, and that's the ultimate reality. They're saying Shruti says that's the ultimate reality, right? Brahman is one without a second. Chandogya Upanishad, right? So if it's one without a second, then it's a problem if Brahman becomes overwhelmed by ignorance, because then it's not one without a second. Maya is more powerful, you know? And then if you say that's his pastime, that he's allowing himself to be like that, that means he's actually transcendental. So that means then the form of the jiva, what they're saying he's becoming, or the form of Ishwar and the form of, you know, Bhagawan and his pastimes, would still be transcendental. Right? But if he actually comes under that, then how is he the supreme without a second? Because Maya can also overpower him. So then it always ends up as duality. So that they claim to be monists, they're actually dualists. You know, or more, but at least two. Like that, minimum. Right.
Can you say that only Vaishnavas can understand this particular point, that they are wrong, that they are dualists?
That means only Vaishnavas can only understand. It's not a matter of understanding that they're wrong, it's a matter of only Vaishnava can understand what's right. You understand? Because everybody else, being under the modes of nature, they can only understand how much is available in understanding from the modes. Right? Because if you're working with the modes, you can only understand what the modes offer. Yes?
That verse that we read,
yes.
It doesn't sound logical to us, but it does sound logical to them. Can we say that Brahman first creates the jiva, then becomes overpowered by the jiva, all that stuff? It sounds logical to them, the Anucheta.
Yeah, they think so. But in here it says, he says it's illogical to say this, because that's what they say.
Yes.
So to them, it's, why is it logical? It's just like this. Let us say you have, let's say, there's something you want. Right? Now, Somehow the clock is partly on and partly off. We're going Picasso here or something. Everything's starting to or no, that's Dolly, right?
Yeah, Dolly
does that. You know, it comes out and it's bent and stuff like that. And next we'll see it going around the corner. Yes. Then we'll be able to see, yes. So, where were we?
Trampling is logical to them.
We got distracted by Dolly.
Okay.
Actually, the question that
now we're getting distracted by, oh, hello, Dolly. Right?
Okay. The question I wanted to ask, if it sounds logical to them because of mine.
Yes. Okay, we were saying, so now there's something you want, right? Now, it's not that, but let's say it's something that's a little bit harder to obtain. You know, it takes a little extra effort or a little extra money in that. So now you're going to go through steps to prove that you should have it. Right? Does that make sense? But now, are those steps necessarily logical?
Yes.
Okay, but you understand the logic they're using there. In other words, it's not logic of intelligence, it's logic of the mind. Because that's the whole point, is that all these intellectuals, ultimately, it's still subjective to their particular, how they want to see reality. They may use intelligence a lot, means they may more cleverly use their intelligence to prove their point, but it's still not, ultimately, not actually logical. That's always the thing. Anyone but Vaishnavas will be doing that. Right? Because the Vaishnavas, then, that's why the term is there, as it is. It's a Vedic term. As it is means that's actually what it is, not according to the modes of nature. So what happens is that everyone, all the karmis, all the jnanis, they're going to look at it through the modes of nature. The more goodness is there, the higher it'll be. But we see is only Brahma. I think it's only Brahma, the Dharma Shastras. I'm not even sure if the Nakshatras are up there. Or maybe the Nakshatras, the Prajapatis, they're the only ones that will be in goodness of goodness. Right? Other demigods will be in passion of goodness or ignorance of goodness. You know, and on this planet then, let's say you have a Brahmin, so if they're, you know, working for the king and they love to argue, they'll be in goodness of passion. Then if they're doing, you know, homas and yajnas, you know, the regular karma kanda stuff and those kind of things, and maintain, they'll be in ignorance of goodness. Or if they're just studying and teaching the scriptures, then that'll be the passion of goodness. So you can see is that it's not, the range is not that wide. You know, it's quite narrow is what they can do. So the intellectuals can basically work in that area. That's if they're working according to Veda. If they're not working according to Veda, you can drop it a little bit lower. So there's going to always be that aspect, is that there's the idea that because I have the mechanical means of you know, quite solid, good intelligence compared to whoever else I'm, because you can only compare to who's around you. So, you know, they don't have, like the academics nowadays and scholars don't have Brihaspati to compare to. So therefore, you know, you go by, what do you call it? In a village of blind men, the man with one eye is king. Right. So that's the principle, is that they will consider that their mechanical use of intelligence is better than others. But it's still going to be, they're using that mechanics in the context of, you know, passion and ignorance. Does that make sense? Even if they're using it in goodness, it's still material goodness. You can't get beyond that. So they're using the machinery, but that machinery still is not in an ideal location. You know, it's just like, let's say I have the fastest car in the world, but I stick it in a big mud puddle. You know, it'll be faster than another, an ambassador in the mud puddle. And so therefore amongst the, you know, the mud puddleites, then, you know, they are the superior one. But the point is they're still in a mud puddle. Right? like that. So that's the point. Is only Vaishnavas can look at it as it is. Others will get glimpses, because we're getting an idea is that, oh, if there's any glimpse, it's the same. But no, it's what's the purpose. The Vaishnav sees the you know, it means they may be also functioning within the modes of nature or influenced by the modes of nature. But they know that the ultimate is Krishna as the supreme reality. And that developing love for him, the position, they actually have real knowledge. Whether they can always act in that position, that's another thing. But they have real knowledge. So they're not on the same platform, let's say, someone else who has, you know, a good solid religious sentiment and has faith in God and God's laws. But what's the ultimate goal of those persons? Right? Like that. It means they want karma or they want jnana. Right? That's it. It's not about bhakti. So even if they're devotional, but what is the ultimate point of that devotion? What will it get them? Again, you're so devotional, so it will be easier to get to heaven. While you're a bit, you know, how you say, ritualistic, you know, it'll be a little harder. You're not ritualistic at all, then now you're getting into a stretch. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is even though they have faith in God, they use that faith simply for karma and jnana. So that's why it's called pious activity. Does that make sense? So it's pious because they're following the laws of God and they're of superior quality, so they acknowledge the presence of God. So the results they'll get from that piety are greater than others, let's say someone who doesn't know about God. Let's say you have someone on Pranamoy and he's doing a pious activity. He'll get less result. He'll get a good result because it's pious, but he'll get less result than someone who has faith in God and doing it because it's God's law. They'll get more. But both of them will still be within the material world. You know, someone might get, you know, some riches here. Someone else will go to the heavenly planets and get riches there, or they'll be, you know, get more riches. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's the difficulty, is that only Vaishnavas can actually understand, because even though we're taking it that, if you have intelligence, then you can know everything. Just like if you have money, you'll be happy. So we know that by having money, you won't be happy, because you have money, but you're still in the context of the material world. So they have knowledge, they have intelligence, but they're still in the context of the material world. You know? So that's all. You know, it's just like the difference is the one guy's suffering in his, you know, that you know, flea-ridden, you know, motel. And the other guy's suffering in his 5-star hotel. They're both suffering. But just one's suffering in a nicer environment than the other one. That's all. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the same way is their intelligence. But they can sit there and have more fun playing with the intelligence. But at the same time, as they're playing within the context of their understanding. So they can't get beyond. So this, as it is, can only be seen by Vaishnavas. So this idea is that, oh no, this as it is, and so therefore we need to give other perspectives. Because this is, okay, this is just that narrow-minded devotional. No, it's the actual, real vision. And all these others, other than as it is, those are narrow visions. Does that make sense? So that's why we don't need other understandings. Is that good? Okay. Brahman is one without a second, right? So, Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.1, Vijnanam Anandam Brahma. Brahma is knowledge and bliss, right? So now here's two qualities, even though he's mere consciousness without qualities, but they're saying, no, he's knowledge and bliss. You understand this? Even though they're showing qualities, they'll say no qualities, right? So point is they're trying to point out it's transcendental. So we're saying the same thing, we're just taking it farther, is that he has unlimited qualities, but none of them are maintained. So they're trying to separate Brahman from the mundane. But they're acknowledging qualities, you know, indirectly, but then saying there are no qualities. But they only can acknowledge a few, knowledge and bliss. But you know, of course, eternity is there. But basically, they can only deal with eternity and a touch of knowledge. It's not actually a full amount of knowledge. So Aranyaka Upanishad 3.9.28. Aneha nanasti kinchana. There is no variety at all. Brihad Aranyaka Upanishad 4.4.19. Right, so they're taking these, even though the context may be different, but they're using them how they like. You know, it's just like we said before. There's something you want, then you're going to use the arguments however you like, even if they make sense or not. Right? You'll convince yourself that this is very important. You know, it's just like, how you say, the day before you decide, okay, I'm getting up at this time because I need this much time for this, and then you get in this and that. You've already worked it out that you have to get up at this particular time. Right? But when the alarm goes off, then you think, no, well, actually, this is there so I can sleep a little longer or this or that, you know. And so you do. And then you get up, and then you notice why the day before you said, no, it's like this. So that's what we're working with. That's what all the karmis and jnanis are working with. So there's no variety at all. Doesn't mean that it means there's no material variety. Or in the material world, there's no variety because it's just the modes of nature. So it's all the same thing, the chewing the chew. However you want to understand. That's the reality. But they're taking it and applying it on the transcendental. So you see, some things, they're dealing with the Lord as transcendental, and other things, then they're not. Or they're only accepting certain aspects of his transcendental position. Endowed with vidya, Brahman becomes Ishwara Chaitanya. And endowed with avidya, Brahman becomes Jiva Chaitanya, through differentiation of cause and effect. A relationship caused by indescribable ignorance, ajnana, which functions as vidya and avidya. Right? So here they're talking indescribable. So it goes beyond logic. So if we're going beyond logic, right, if we're dealing with supreme, it's natural it goes beyond logic, since logic comes from the supreme. So to say something's inconceivable is not being illogical. It's just the way it is. When ignorance is destroyed by knowledge of one sarup, states of Ishwar and Jiva cease to exist. But one sarup, but that there's a ones, your own, when it's all just one conscious, unlimited conscious, that means that's already illusion that you have a sarup. You understand? Don't understand. If I say, if I am in knowledge, when ignorance is destroyed by knowledge of one sarup, because remember, this is still the Purva Paksha, this is still the argument against the Vaishnava position. This is the Mayavadi's position. So, if I know one sarup, if I know my sarup, but who's this my? The my is ignorance. So, there is no sarup. There is no I. Right? Is it? There is no I in Maya body, right? You know, you understand? So the point is they're saying this is my sarup and I am God. But the point is no, you're not, because there's nothing, so you don't exist. So then, what's the whole point? You know what I'm saying? So this is where their ignorance becomes clouded by Maya. Only the one state of mere consciousness without qualities exists. Right, but if that, then why is there one sarup? Because they want to feel I'm God. They want to feel the Ananda. So it's about them, it's subjective. But then they're saying, no, it's all objective. Yeah. This is cunning Shankara's view. So he's very cunning. It sounds logical. Because we are a person. So we say, when you understand your sarup, I'll relate to that because I am a person. But they're presenting an impersonal philosophy. They're presenting it from the point of... Somebody say? Yeah. So you just take it to something else that you can relate to, and then it works. Like we're saying, you need something. And so, what's the anxiety? Right? The anxiety, let's say, in this case, is... the cost. Right? So now, as long as we're talking cost, it's not going to, we're not going to convince ourselves. But if we use a different perspective, the usefulness of it or other aspects, then from that, then we can say that it's worth it. And since it's worth it, then we're going to get it, and then it happens to the how much it costs is just within the mechanics of acquiring it. You understand? So they switch contexts. So that's why he says it's very cunning, because he's not using one context throughout. He keeps switching the contexts. But because all those contexts the jiva can relate to, because they're personal, right? Even the desire for liberation is because you're a person, right? Because as a person, I'm suffering. So therefore, as a person, I want to get out of suffering. But I'll only enjoy it because I'm a person, right? But I'm saying because being a person is the problem, therefore not being a person that will work. Right? So it's a standard kind of thing, is that you're saying things that you're using one thing that you can relate to in a context of another and just keep switching them around. So as long as it's logical in that context, we'll call it logic. But it's not logical within itself. Does that make sense? Because you keep changing the environment in which it's being explained. Does that make sense? So that's why you keep them to one point. Like Prabhupada was talking to the Christians. He said, thou shalt not kill. And then they go off on something, but it says you won't kill. And they go off there. I did that once to some, you know, really preachy Christian guy. After a very short time, he freaked out. Because he says, why won't you let the conversation go beyond this point? You know, we can't discuss. No, we discussed this point. They just want to talk. And so they'll keep moving. That's why you see in an argument, when you say something that they can't defeat, they'll move to a different perspective. And then argue that as if somehow or another that relates to this one. You know? Does that make sense? So that's what you do. So you just have to keep somebody on one point. Or, if they want to do 10 points, yeah, then you'll deal with each one separately. Does that make sense? But the point is then they'll end up with nothing to say. Yes. Okay. That is presented in this Anucheda. The meaning is clear. Briti from Jiva Toshana. Mayavadis claim that ultimate reality is non-dual, pure consciousness without form or attributes. Hence they define ultimate reality only in negative terms, right? It just is, there's nothing. It's not positive. They say neti neti. The real meaning of neti neti is not this much, implying that the Lord is not limited to this phenomenal world, but exists beyond it. A description of this is given in Srimad Bhagavatam, verse 2.2.18. Not this, not that. But then, according to the Mayavadis, there's something called Maya, right? Because you say there's one non-dual, pure consciousness without form or attributes. That's it. That's all there is. There isn't anything else. Then having described that and everyone's nodding their head and all that, then they'll describe there's Maya, which has qualities. But where did that come from? You understand? So then they have to use this whole convoluted thing to somehow or another make it sound logical. Which is beginningless and indefinable, being distinct from both existence, sat, and non-existence, or void, asat. Right? It's also indefinable. So they're comfortable to work with indefinable, indescribable. What was the other word they used here? Yeah, indescribable, indefinable. But at the same time, we used to say achinta beta beta tattva, they'll say, oh, that's not logical. Right? This Maya has two features, knowledge, vidya, and ignorance, avidya. Right? Somehow or other, some part of Brahman comes in contact with Maya, and the result is illusion for that portion of Brahma, Brahman, even though it's transcendental. Either it contacts the knowledge aspect of Maya or the ignorance aspect. When Brahman contacts the vidya or knowledge aspect of Maya, it turns into Ishwara, the Lord. When it contacts avidya aspect, it turns into Jiva. Right? So now, then in this, why he would be there? Because they're trying to explain how Vishnu is there and how there actually is authority and everything like that. Right, and then if you have Vishnu, then you can have down to the demigods, add a little more passion and this and that. The other aspect, that's just explains things that the Vedic version sounds all right to them. But actually, for their own subjective need, then the point is do they're not going to be, they'll say, I'm not, I'm Jiva. I want to get out of that position because I'm suffering. So what do you want to become? I want to become God. Right? So now, it's just Brahman, then that means there's a nothingness there. There's no your own Sarup and this and that. But if you're in knowledge, then you become Ishwara. And which is what you want to become. Because then as Ishwara, then I can then come back to the position of the Brahman, and then I will taste Brahmananda. Right? So what are we looking at? Ishwara and Brahmananda. Right? It's just their form of controller and enjoyer. Yes.
We observe this like in practical day-to-day life. If you see somebody who is very much greater than you, and you have to point faults in him to bring him at a level where you can say that you can reach him.
Yes,
and
yes.
That absolute best doesn't exist at all.
Yes, 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 yes. Or bring yourself up.
We cannot bring ourselves up. That's why we have to bring
up. Oh, no, but you use a different context.
Yeah.
Like, let's say you have some friends sitting in their local, you know, roadside cafe kind of thing like that. And they're drinking their beer, right? So then they get talking about, let's say, celebrities. Or, you know, somebody up on that level that, like you said, you can't do that. So one is they'll bring them down, oh, but you know, he's this, he's that, and so many things like that. So that will bring them down. Then, but that's not enough. Then you have to say, but we're more real. We have real friendships here. Right? And what is their friendship based on? Finding fault in someone else. Right? So you, like you said, you bring them down, put yourself up. So you brought Brahman down like that, and then you bring yourself up, your Ishwara, and then you're a level like this. Because you say we're all Brahman, but then where's your individual position? You know, so that's the difficulty, is they have to, because they're jivas, that's how you can tell Mayavadis are still jivas, because they make these particular assumptions. Right? That I have a sarup.
Right.
Yes.
And who's Maya for them?
Who's Maya for them?
I mean, if there's only Brahman, then now it's Brahman.
That's the whole point, that says indefinable, indescribable. How it means you have only Brahman, but then there's this indescribable thing called Maya. Where that it's not what is it? It's not eternal. It's not nothing. Right?
So when there's influences you, you become something else.
Yes. So it's not Sat. So it's not Brahman, but it's not Asat, meaning the void or the jiva or this or that or like that. So that way they can also separate themselves from the Buddhists. Like that. So, it's just something else, and they say it's indefinable, indescribable. You know, this is what we're saying. When you get to this point, up to this point, they can use logic quite well. But at this point, where the Lord, the Jiva, and material energy come together, that aspect is Sambhamnyan, their philosophy totally falls apart. Their logic, everything goes out the window. But because you've accepted all this, you know, why won't they take that?
And another point also, if they say that by vidya they become Brahman, but there's always some areas of avidya that every jiva contacts, and then they become back, they come in back to become a jiva.
That, I guess, when they're proud enough of their position, because here knowledge means their knowledge of Brahman. It doesn't mean material knowledge, you know, that they know, you know, let's say, you know, electronics or something. Right? It's just that they know Brahman, so that's actual knowledge, so that's vidya. And all this other knowledge that we would call knowledge, that's avidya. Right? So we'll call it, if you have paravidya, or transcendental knowledge, actual knowledge, then we'll call all knowledge that is used in context of transcendental knowledge, we'll call it aparavidya. But if it's not used in context of parabrahman, then it will be called avidya. So in the Upanishads, they only deal with vidya and avidya. So it's knowledge of transcendence, and then there's everything else. Right? There's this, there's that. Does that make sense? So that's the jnanis. The karmis, then there'll be these three. So in other words, I know about the Supreme Lord. I know about all this material knowledge in context of the Supreme Lord. It's being used that way, so that becomes apara avidya. That area where I'm not seeing it in connection with the Lord, that's avidya. So then it keeps them on the path of paravidya, apara avidya, you know, in pursuance of apara, paravidya. So they're trying to elevate themselves through that aspect of karma. The jnanis, then they don't accept the material knowledge. It's just you understand transcendence or you don't. Is that, so that's why they won't use the three. They'll only use the two.
And what's their understanding of knowing Brahman, what does that mean?
That will be vidya.
No, but what practical, in their sense, what does that mean?
It just means you are Brahman. There is nothing practical about it. Yeah, that's why I say one sarup. So that's why it gets cloudy at that point. They say it's a vidya, they know the Lord, but then it comes clouded by this lack of knowledge. So that's what we're meaning. They can't get beyond the modes of nature. It means even they get beyond technically the mechanics of the modes, they won't get beyond avidya. Because avidya is there before the modes. Right? When avidya is applied, it becomes the three modes of nature. So that's why is the jiva is already under the influence of avidya when they come into the material existence. Then we have the the pradhan, right, which is just all the material things together. Then by the Lord's glance it separates. But then as avyakta, then you have to be able to bring that these things can work together. So then the Lord entering it, then they can connect together all the different earth elements, this elements, that, and then they can make things. Otherwise, what's the point of having the elements if you can do nothing with them? You know? So at that point, then that attraction can be there. So that combination of the jiva's avidya, then now they'll be attracted to maya. So then that becomes sutra or the mahatattva. Because the point of mahatattva, what's its uniqueness is that now the jiva has something to focus on and apply their desire towards. Then Brahma manifests in the secondary creation, then the facility for that to be applied. Right? Because otherwise you have the desire, but you can't do anything with it. You can just see all the elements, so therefore you're in Shuddha-sattva. You're in goodness, or that pure goodness, but it's not without the aspect of avidya. It means you don't know your relationship with the Lord. You can see the Lord, you can see the energy, you can see the jivas, you have all that knowledge. But you don't actually understand it in the devotional context. It's not actually situated properly. Does that make sense?
The Mayavadis say that there are three levels of reality. The first one is for the conditioned jiva, which they perceive the material world as what they pursue.
Okay.
And then the second level is the level of reality with respect to Ishvara,
okay,
which is still a material one, but that's what we call as a perfect material thing.
Okay.
And the third level is the Brahman reality, where everything is like merges, there is nothing. For them, that the top level of reality, which is Brahman, that is transcendental, which the Upanishads are speaking about.
Right.
And they bring Ishvara and other things still on the material platform.
Material platform. So then they can function here and still have a form because
yes,
they're Ishvara.
Yes.
Therefore, they call each other Narayan.
They are technical names, like they use the Advaita Vadis, but this we come in next
sentence. Look up. Okay. Yes.
So then does it mean, Maharaj, that they aspire to become the Ishvara first and then they aim for
it's not a matter that they aspire to become Ishvara first. It's just that it's a matter of they're trying to get to the platform of Brahman, identifying with Brahman. So if they're Brahman, automatically they'd be identifying with Ishvara. Mm-hmm. It just comes as a side thing.
If they identify Ishwaran, then be multiple jivas like this will be multiple Ishwaras and others.
It doesn't matter to them because it's, as you said, it's all mundane anyway. You know what I'm saying? The point is for them, it's all mundane. So it's not that the Lord can't have many incarnations, so it's not a problem. But then, according to the Mayavadis, there is something called Maya, which is beginningless and indefinable, being distinct from both existence, sat, and non-existence. Oh, we did all this. Okay. Okay. This understanding is completely antagonistic to bhakti and is therefore one of the greatest obstacles on the path of devotion. Srila Raghunath Das Goswami compares impersonalism to a tigress that devours one's spiritual life. He says, kata mukti, vyagriya, nashuti kila saravat magilani, manasiksha 4. My dear mind, never listen to talk about liberation, which is like a tigress who swallows everything, including the jiva. Notice here in the sarvatma gila ni. So you see here is that. So that something's a magila comes from. It comes from the Sanskrit. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave a stern warning to those who aspire for a correct understanding of the personality of Godhead. He said, Mayavadi bhashya shunile hoya sarvanash. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyalila 6:153. Hearing Mayavad philosophy can completely destroy one's spiritual life. Ultimately, he says, the Mayavadis, by describing absolute reality as not having any features, are the greatest offenders against the Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna. In a similar vein, Sri Madhvacharya wrote forceful refutations of the Mayavad theory. One of his most impressive is the Mayavada Khandanam. In this and other works, he exposes the Mayavadis for their jugglery of Sanskrit grammar and faulty logic in their vain attempt to prove absolute non-difference between God and the jiva. So he's just taking it and showing what they're using. It's against logic. And he'll use the grammar and everything to do it. So he'll use very technical points of the nyaya, the padarthas, and then along with the grammar of Sanskrit. Because if you're talking one thing and then you suddenly change it in your explanation, it's not logical. It has to be the same. Yes.
Like the Jiva Goswami in the next sandarbha, on this very one point that Brahman is without qualities. In order to refute that one point, that is like the whole book, the next book is just addressing that. With all these
means in the Paramatma.
In the Bhagavad Sandarbha.
Okay. One book just to get rid of that one.
The Brahman should have qualities. There is nothing like Brahman without qualities. That statement itself is false.
Yes. Okay. Uttara. So that this is Jiva Goswami.
No, this
is Baladeva Vidyabhushan. Baladeva Vidyabhushan's. Ah, okay, his Uttara. So Baladeva Vidyabhushan, then this is his commentary on.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay, so the.
He gave comment.
Okay, so the.
The verse, then.
Okay, the Anucheda is Jiva Goswami. Then Jiva Goswami gives the. And the Jiva Toshani is.
Us.
Okay. And then the. Okay. And then Baladeva Vidyabhushan, he gives his. What's his called?
He didn't
give a name. Okay. Okay. Uttara. Simultaneously, suddenly, by combination with ignorance, one part of Raman gives shelter to Vidya and another part is defeated by Avidya. So you're giving shelter to Vidya, and one is being defeated by Avidya, though technically both of them are material, so both of them would be a defeat by their philosophy. But because they want to be Ishwara, then they have to say they're giving shelter. They make it into a, what do you call that? Where you make something not nice sound nice? Yeah, that political correctness, that they just try to adjust it like that. But what fault has Brahman become by what fault has Brahman become subject to various disturbances and experiences of suffering? It is impossible to explain how Brahman develops a relationship with ignorance. Thus, the categories described by Shankara are not accepted. We accept what is seen by Vyas. Right? So, they're saying that this happens, but how can they can't explain that? They just say it does happen. And then if you ask, oh, it's indescribable. So, it's not logical. Right? So, that's the point, is that the other is, it's indescribable. Yes, but Krishna can reveal how it is. So the point is through mundane logic, it can't be described. It can be described by the transcendence. Then when we accept that transcendental position, we see is what they're trying to obtain already has its natural personal position. So the personal and the impersonal exist simultaneously. That makes sense? With the impersonal being subservient to the personal. Riti. In the next anucheta, Jiva Goswami states that the difference between the Jiva and the Lord is real and not just empirical. So empirical means perception.
Perception.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well,
they accept Vyasadeva, but they have their own interpretation, their own hermeneutics. That's why I said before is that this is cunning Shankara's view. He takes the words and then through their word juggling, that's what he's saying before, is that, what's he saying? Madhvacharya. Then he exposes the Mayavadis for their juggling of Sanskrit grammar and faulty logic in their vain attempt to prove absolute non-difference between God and the Jiva. Right? Because they want to show there's a non-difference between the God and the Jiva. So on that first platform, the Jiva, it means I'm the Jiva. And that's within the material, within Maya, right? But Ishwar is also within Maya, but within knowledge. So now I've gotten knowledge, so now I become Ishwar, right? From that point. And then, top it off, then at the same time I'm Brahman, so then I'm on that platform. I'm the ultimate transcendental reality also. So it's just, that's the way he uses the vain attempt. It's just pride. So in either way, they'll get it. Because if I say you're God, whether in the transcendental or not transcendental position, we'll be happy with that. Right? Because of our pride. So either way, you still say, well, you're still talking, you're still walking, how can you be Brahman? Oh, but we're Ishwara, because we're in this position, but we're in knowledge. But when we give that up, then we'll become Brahman. Right? So then it still sounds good. They're able to maintain their false ego and for either way. They'll talk as if they're Brahman, but if someone points it out, then they'll say, oh no, but we're... like that. So the thing is, according to their philosophy, they don't exist. So the point is, why are they talking in the first place? Because they'll even say, you can't explain transcendence by words, then why are you talking about it? Because they don't understand Shakti. If you understand Shakti Parinamavad, then it's a transformation of the energy. So it's the Lord's potency, is that you're working under either the internal or the external. So in these forms that you have the vidya and avidya, you're basically dealing with yogamaya or mahamaya. But they don't know about yogamaya. So that's why they can't get up to this point, they can't describe past this. Because they're not accepting what's beyond the creation. Right? They're accepting up to Pradhan and then going back to Brahman. But they can't accept that Brahman's coming from a person. Is this, yeah.
So Maharaj, all this originates to just cover up the fault that the Jiva can be illusion.
Yes. Yes. So therefore, I'm an illusion, I don't want to feel bad. Right? So therefore, I have switched from being Jiva, who's in illusion, to being Ishwara, who's not in illusion. They're in knowledge, but it's still within the material content. So therefore, you can still be manifest. They can still walk around and feel good about themselves.
And also, if Absolute has qualities, that means I cannot be that Absolute because I'm illusion.
Yes, I'm illusion and they're not, so it just gives them a stronger position. That's a very nice point. You understand? It gives them an angle that they themselves aren't in a bad position. They, as the jiva, can be the absolute. But if Brahman has qualities that are beyond, that are transcendental, we don't have that. If Brahman can't be put into illusion, the jiva exists eternally, and the jiva can be either in transcendentally situated illusion. That means we can never become God. So that's the whole point, is the basis of the philosophy is, I want to be God. I want to be the supreme controller, therefore the supreme enjoyer. Right? You know, that's why we argue with everybody else, because I'm supposed to be the supreme enjoyer. Why are you getting in the way of my supreme enjoyment? But the other person is arguing the same thing because he says he's the supreme enjoyer. Yes?
They want to take position of God, who is the supreme enjoyer, but the God they describe is not enjoying. Where's the enjoyment? No qualities, no pastimes, no variety.
Yes, that's why they bring it down to Ishwara. Because then in that, then we, in this pazik, we can enjoy. But then when you get to that ultimate, then you won't be. But they'll say it's Brahmananda. But the point, what they're not catching is that ananda means you can tell the difference between things. There's a relationship between things. So therefore, then, the context is otherwise something's ananda or near ananda. How do you tell the difference? Because there's a difference. So when you merge into Brahman and there's no distinction, then you can't appreciate the ananda of Brahman as an individual. And so if it's that, then what does it matter? Because if Brahman is already experiencing that, why does he need you to merge into him to experience that? He's already experiencing. So you're inconsequential anyway. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. And if they're saying, oh, it's only consciousness, but it's conscious, but at the same time there's no personality. But how are you conscious unless you're aware of distinctions and aware of these things? So that's the difficulties. They don't take it far enough because they don't want to. Because otherwise, then they're in a faulty position. They're the idiot who's left the spiritual world and come here. While in this other thing, it just indescribably happened. So nobody can complain that I'm an illusion because it just happened. But by our philosophy, we actually made a choice and came here. That's stupid, right? So they don't want to have to deal with that aspect.
And when they say that Brahman is without qualities, and on the other hand, they aspire for the Brahmananda, but Ananda means quality, so they're going against their definitions.
Yes, they're going against their definition. Yes, yes.
I am wondering that people who like really study these things and like how practically are they living in daily life?
It's not a matter of, if you're a jnani, it's not about a practical life of a karmi. They're renunciates.
Yes.
So they're not dealing with the world. So for them, sitting around and talking this all day, for them is practical. Because all they do is go down to the river, take their bath, come back, you know, hang up their cloth, you know, and hope that the brahmacharis don't steal it and make it into copings.
In fact, according to their philosophy, till you attain that level where you can just focus on that, then you practice bhakti to purify yourself.
Yes.
So they also say you practice bhakti.
Yeah.
And for them, bhakti means what?
Bhakti means that you follow what's recommended as devotional activities, and you have that sentiment of devotion towards the Lord, but for the purpose of gaining something. Just like you want something from somebody, you can put in a very nice devotional effort to please them. But once you get what you want, you stop.
So you basically do varnashrama with the touch of devotion?
Yes. Yes. That's what we're saying, is that when it's said that everything's contained in bhakti and the other systems of religion can't function without bhakti, it's actually literal. Means religion means they're just the external forms of bhakti, right? The secondary forms of bhakti, the primary being that devotion to Krishna, and the secondary being the forms that you use to express that devotion. Right? So different living entities have different inclinations towards different aspects. But you can hold it all together socially with the Varnashram, because it'll make everybody has a place within it. That's the nice thing about it. That's why it's the superior system, because everybody, no matter what they are as a karmi, a jnani, or even detached, they can still fit within the system or work with the system. So even the Paramahansa is not performing duties within the system. The etiquette of the Vaishnavs matches it's the etiquette that's used by those within Varnashram, so then they can still interact. Is that something? Yeah. So that's then what they're doing. But they, because they feel they have that knowledge about the Lord and then Maya and these two aspects of Vidya and Avidya, that then makes them in knowledge, so that makes them equal to Ishwara. And so then they'll follow, because then we see is Ishwara is working within the material context and following Varnashram, they'll follow Varnashram and perform their sannyas duties and all these things and be nice to people and give blessings and take their bath and do all the different things that they do. You know, just like when Lord Chaitanya washed his feet and then sat down in that place, then technically according to their philosophy, there's no difference. But then Prakashananda Saraswati in that feels bad that why such a elevated person is sitting in this dirty place. So he's making distinction. So following the edit, then they invite him up. Is this that makes sense? Yeah. So that's the point, is they're living in an illusion of that they're Ishwara. Just like, let's say, the intellectual is living in the illusion that they're the smartest person in the universe. Just like the administrator thinks they're the most powerful person in the universe. Just like the businessman thinks he's the richest and therefore can get anything he wants done because of his money. And then the artist thinks that, themselves they're perfectly represented through their particular, art or skill. And so, and through that, then they can get things done. Does that make sense? So their fame. It's just like, let's say, you have a celebrity that nobody knows them. They're washing dishes somewhere like this, and then they get their break, and then they become very well known. The people seeing them on the street recognize them. Right? So now they're famous. So now they fear by this fame they can get anything done. They don't need to stand in the line. They don't need to do this. People, come, this and that. They'll get all their facilities. Everything works. But they're only famous because of expressing the skill. But once they have fame, then they figure it's done. And so even if they don't act well, if they stay famous, they'll be satisfied. So if they're not acting well, that's not the problem. The problem is their fame goes down. Or the rich man, he really has more money or less, his influence goes down. Or politics, his influence goes down. So the point is that through these things that they have, the knowledge and their power, their wealth, their fame, influence wanes. And that's where the problem comes. Because we want to be the controller. Right? So as long as we have influence, it doesn't matter. Is that yeah. Okay, Anucheta 36. Na cho chopa ditaratmya maya paricheda pratibimbatvadi vyasasthaya kayor vibhaga syat. Jiva and Brahman cannot become separate by an arrangement of reflection or bifurcation through different upadis. So he's making the...
This is Jiva Goswami saying that these are the two philosophies they use, reflection
or bifurcation. And then with that, then they get the Jivas and Ishwara. Hmm. And then the difference between Jiva, Ishwara and Brahman. Okay.
So he's saying they cannot do that. Jiva will not become separate by just speaking this philosophy.
Okay.
Next verse.
Anucheta Prakashika. The Mayavadi philosophers hold there is one reality. The formless, indivisible, non-variegated, impersonal Brahman. And they have various theories for explaining the apparent existence of Jiva and Ishwara. Right? So if you defeat one of them, then they'll use the other ones. Like that. And this way, then they think that they're being clever. But the point is they're basing it on one of these philosophies, like reflection or bifurcation. So when you take reflection and defeat it, then they'll use bifurcation. We saw before, is if you defeat that, they'll use Buddhist philosophy. They'll just use anything to try to prove. Even though they said that Maya is not Sat or Asat. Because the Maya Buddhist philosophy is it's Asat. There's nothing. It's just void. So, but they'll do it just to establish their position. That's what we're saying. It's just about establishing the position. It's not actually about knowing the absolute truth. If it's about knowing the absolute truth, if there's an individual living entity that's their interest, but they just happen to be a Mayavadi, when they come in contact with the Vaishnava philosophy and their philosophy is defeated, they'll take up the Vaishnava philosophy. Like we see with Prakashananda Saraswati. Right? He takes it up because he actually is a true seeker. But up to this point, he's only come across the Mayavadis. So he accepted that. Or like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. But now having come in contact with the Vaishnava philosophy, they give that up and become Vaishnavas. Does that make sense? Because their position doesn't change. That's why the perfection of the Varnashram system is Prakashananda Saraswati will continue on as a sannyasi and his duties don't change. Just now he adds into that proper understanding and worship of the Lord. And for Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, his duties as a grihastha remain exactly the same. Just now that he'll understand in context of worshipping the Lord. Yes.
In this context, it's this attitude of performing devotional service, that was what was lost before. So the Buddhism came to remove people because they are misusing the facilities and misusing everything.
Okay. Yes, yes.
And the Buddhism comes to remove first, behave properly. Then to Mayavad, he introduces back the attitude because now there is something called Ishvara, then you need to worship.
Okay.
Then again.
Yeah, and then the Vaishnavas bring it into the proper context. Does that make sense? Didn't make sense. He's saying is that, because generally we're taking that, he's just going a little deeper on the point of Kali Yuga comes in, so the Karmakandis are following the Karmakanda sacrifices of animals. Well, they're not allowed in Kali Yuga, but still they're following due to attachment. And so then when Buddha comes, because that and tells them, don't do this, you know, you should give up these animal sacrifices, killing animals of violence. Then they say no because the Vedas say to do this. So what's happening is they're misusing. The Vedas are supposed to be using for bhakti, but they're not using it for bhakti. They're just using it for sense gratification. Because that's the meaning of now it's gone from aparavidya to avidya. And they're situated in that. And Buddha's trying to tell them, see it in the context of aparavidya. Right? Then they can move forward. But no, they're attached to seeing it in ignorance. It's not connected to bhakti, it's just about the sense guide. So therefore he says, no Veda. Just follow him. So then, just following him, he's gotten rid of the Veda on which they're basing their authority for their misdirection. Now they don't have that authority, so they only have Buddha. So now he's saying, be nice, be good. And so then, you know, 2,500 years of that, then now they're nice and good. Right? So now they can be brought back into following the Vedic form and accepting authorities that they're saying about Ishwara and Brahman. But not, but it's still the Buddhist philosophy in that they're just merging into basically nothingness. Then, having accepted again the forms used in bhakti, right, they accepted the religious forms and authority, then now the Vaishnavas can come and establish the devotional philosophy, the devotional understanding. Does that make sense? Okay. Out of these two mentioned in this Anucheda, Parichedavada and Pratibimbavada. So, Parichedavada is?
Parichedavada is the bifurcation.
Bifurcation. And Pratibimbavada is that. You should mention that.
Yeah.
so that it's clear.
Yes.
Parichetavad. Okay, so parichetavad is the bifurcation, because he said jiva and Brahman cannot become separate by an arrangement of reflection or bifurcation through different upadis. Okay, so parichetavad. According to the parichetavad, the one indivisible Brahman appears divided into many embodied jivas because of various upadis. Just as one great sky, Mahakasha, appears divided in various parts, Ghatakasha. Right? So there you're saying you're dividing. You take the pot, and now the ether in the pot is different from the ether outside. But you break the pot, now the ether becomes merged in the same. Even though it's the same ether that's pervading. What they're forgetting is that you have the pot there, right? And so what's the point of the pot? Is that air can go inside the pot, or things can go in the pot. Therefore, then the jiva can be in this pot, or be the pot. You are the pot. Be the pot. You know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So then the difficulty comes up is that ether does not require a hole in the pot to be there. Ether is the space the pot takes up. So using Akash, the Akash is still the same Akash. It hasn't become divided. It's only our perceptive that is there. So even with the pot, it's not. They're saying you have to break the pot. But we'll say it's the same. Right? So it's all Krishna and his energies. And so that's all pervading. And so there's not going to be... So the impersonal aspect includes all of Krishna's energies. All of his qualities. And so they'll be pervading everywhere. And then according to the form that's there, they'll manifest. Right? And so you can either, that's either done through Yogamaya or Mahamaya. Yogamaya means it's in the context of love for Krishna and that exchange. Mahamaya means it's without that love for Krishna. Does that make sense? That means, yeah. No difference exists between the sky inside the pot and the sky outside of it. This distinction is assumed only for practical purposes. So this is still being explaining the parichetavad. Yeah. Once the pot is broken, the sky inside merges into the great sky without, and all apparent distinctions vanish. Right? We'll say it was never that. That was not the distinctions in the first place. Right. Similarly, there is no difference between Brahman and the embodied jiva. The limiting adjunct, the subtle body, is actually a false limitation of the jiva adopts as a result of contact with the avidya potency of maya, causing him to appear separate from Brahman. Right? But they're not explaining why would the jiva accept that? Why would this happen? What's the cause? So then if Brahman is not a person, it's just conscious, what is maya? So why would maya be doing this? What's the purpose of it? Why would the jiva be accepting it? What's the purpose of it? So, because they only have impersonal philosophy, they can't explain this. Because it only has explanation from the personal. Only when there's personal, then there's a meeting of why. Like, why does the jiva come? Because he wants to be the controller and enjoyer. That's why. Right? And so, therefore, then why is there the material manifestation? Out of the desire of Krishna. Because Krishna doesn't want his internal potency disturbed by jivas that are not acting in the proper consciousness. Because in the spiritual world, everything is conscious. Right? So in the material world, we're trying to enjoy dead matter. Right? And the dead matter doesn't mind. Right? So that's the whole point, is that therefore, by Krishna's desire, then it's a separate place is given. But what's the real purpose of Krishna's desire is to bring the jivas back to the spiritual world. Right? That's the whole idea, to bring them back to the spiritual platform. Back to taking part in pastimes with Krishna. Right? That's then the whole idea. So then there's meaning to why there's the material manifestation. Why does the Lord come in his incarnations? Why is the jiva bound? How the jiva gets liberated? What's his natural state? Why the personal is there? So it explains everything. As soon as you bring in a personal God and the jivas being eternal, now everything becomes easily explained. But for theirs, they have to use so much jugglery and everything like that. But to the mundane consciousness, the mundane intelligence, it seems to be Why? Because it's saying you're transcendental, maintaining a mundane perspective. While we're saying that the jiva is transcendental, you have to give up the mundane perspective that we're the controller and enjoyer. The Maya bodies, you're still the controller and enjoyer. And you've become the supreme. So that's why we came here in the first place. So only when we become so frustrated in I can't control and enjoy in karma, you know, manipulating material energy, then I'll throw it all out and I'll become the controller and enjoyer by becoming God. But the foundation is I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's the avidya. So they're thinking, they're taking avidya means the upadis. Right, and vidya means the knowledge of whatever is there, philosophy. But actually, avidya means not seeing it in connection to the Lord as a person. Right, so that's how you can understand Brahman or even Paramatma, but not Bhagavan, and still be under the influence of avidya. Because otherwise, where's Paramatma and Brahman come from? Why are they there? Because of the person. Does that make sense? So that means you see, because we're dealing with Sandarbhas here, narrows it down. Only Vaishnavas actually understand they're in Vidya. They're under the Vidya Shakti. Within a Vidya, then you'll have there's knowledge and detachment and these kind of things like that. Right? So when we talk knowledge, we mean about Krishna. But otherwise, yeah, knowledge of Brahman for those, knowledge of the Vedas and the ritual, like the Brahmins, they have knowledge of the rituals and the lifestyle of someone in goodness. So if someone is not living that, they'll say they're in ignorance. Right? Now, let us say someone in ignorance, right? They come from the, you know, across the ocean and all that, and their ships and all that. And so then, but they'll consider we're in knowledge. Right, we have science, we have technology, we have this, and then the uncivilized, you know, people living in the forest, they're in ignorance. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So this way it just keeps going down. And if you ask those tribals, they'll think that these people that came across in the boats, they're in ignorance because they don't even know simple things, just how the forest works. You know? Yes.
In the spiritual world also, there is shaktis of vidya and avidya.
Yes.
And then that reflects in the material world as what we are talking
yes,
about.
Yes, yes.
So the spiritual world, that vidya, is only contacted by devotees. Because
yes.
For nobody else, it's yes. Not.
But even the avidya that's there, you can see on the transcendental platform, it's the covering of yoga maya.
Yes, yes. That's
it. So, but it's a different thing, but that's what becomes reflected. So therefore you have sarvajnan mukdata. And so for the pastimes of sweetness, then there's the aspect of mukdata. For the pastimes of majesty, then it's sarvajna. So that's the point. Vaikuntha is just sarvajna. And Vrindavan basically is a mukdata. And then Dwarka will be the two, the mix. Right? Because it means if you have one, you have, just like you have activities at night, you have activities in the day, but you also have activities at the sandhya. Like that. So it's just natural. Right? You have the internal potency, you have the external potency, you have what's in the middle, the jiva. So it's just, these are eternal principles. So you're always going to have. So Dwarka is natural that it'll be there because you have the sweetness and you have the matrices. But it has to be something that's there. And then you have Dwarka will be half-half. Mathura will be a little more sweetness. Ayodhya will be a little more majesty. Does that make sense? Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So, because this point, generally we always get confused when we talk about vidya in a material realm, and then when we talk about vidya obtained by devotees, it's what we are talking about is the
yes, this is the transcendental. So that's why always we have our definitions. Mm-hmm. There is the eternal definitions. Then you have the reflection of those definitions. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's what comes here. It's reflected. So then it, that's why you know, have to know the context of the word we're using. That's why we're seeing is that means now we're starting to catch that a bit. But remember before is that we don't have an understanding of the definitions, right? Then as we with time we get an understanding of the definition, right? then we see is that we go into seventh canto, then it starts to point out that there's something beyond these definitions. Then we start seeing in the ninth canto, these definitions are turned on their head. And so then we start arguing with that. And then through 11th canto, we're arguing about this. Because it's that, no, this word means this. But it means that in this context. But in the transcendental context, it means something else. It means the original form of that. Does that make sense? So then now we're able to deal with those things a little bit better. So that's the thing. Is not now is that you've seen the dawning of understanding, like that. Okay? And why that's important, you know, because then you'll be aware that there is the transcendental, and that then when we get into Chaitanya Charitamrita, then we'll see how it's defined there, and then how that all works. Then we can appreciate that. Because if we can't distinguish between matter and spirit, we won't actually appreciate the Lord's transcendental pastimes. Is it? So that's because someone may ask, why do we need to know this? You don't need to know this, technically. You just need to know Krishna. Because if you know Krishna, actually, you'll know this. You'll understand him. Because it's not a big deal. We have to go over it again and again because we're not quite getting it. But otherwise, yeah, it has its place. You know? Is that so it's just as we kind of go past that point, and then you can see over, you know, it's just like the wall, you can see over the wall of it. How do you say it? Probably it's at the curtain, right? The curtain of Maya. Does that make sense? Okay. When Brahman is limited by a subtle body, it becomes a jiva. When it is limited by vidya, it is called Ishwara. So here is the subtle body becomes jiva. So their ideas must be they're giving up their subtle body and they're just Ishwara. They're just functioning on vidya. Though their mind, intelligence, and identity is still functioning, but they're ignoring that and then trying to claim their Ishwara. Because even by their own definition of Ishwara, they're not Ishwara. Right? Yeah. This doctrine of separation was propagated by Vachaspati Misra, 9th century, the writer of the Brahmati commentaries on Shankara Bhasya. So you see, as that will be the main emphasis. So you see that one coming up. Pratibimbavad. So that will be reflection. According to the Pratibimba Vad, the formless, undivided Brahman reflects into the various subtle bodies made of avidya and appears as many, just as the one sun reflects as many in various receptacles of water. So it's always a pot. It's just whether it has nothing in it or you have water in it. Like that. In this example, the sun is never affected by movement or change in the water. Only the reflection is affected. Similarly, happiness, and also you have that there's unlimited, how many pots you put, that many suns there'll be. Right? Similarly, happiness and distress is an illusion perceived by the jiva only in the conditioned or reflected state. In other words, the shimmering of the water in the pot, that the jiva experience, the sun doesn't. So when you identify as Brahmana, the sun, then you don't experience that anymore. That's their idea. But they're experiencing that by trying to become Parabrahman, where we're saying we just become servant of Parabrahman and accept that, surrender, that same effect is there. Because we are identifying with the subtle body, therefore there's happiness and distress. As soon as we identify as servant of Krishna, we're unaffected by happiness and distress. Doesn't mean it doesn't go on around us, it's just we're unaffected. You know, it's just like, let's say a friend is disturbed by something, right? It doesn't disturb you. That's why you're able to help. Right? Because it's not connected with your subtle body. If there's so much identification with it, or it's something similar, then you might, and then it's just, you know, you both feel miserable together. Like that. And then you have to have, there must be some what do you call it? There must be an entity beyond that, transcendentally situated entity that will help you go beyond this misery, you know, generally known on the general practical circles known as chocolate, you know, and then that one takes you beyond that position of misery. Right? No? No? For some, it doesn't work for everybody. Okay.
Too controversial.
Okay.
Ice cream.
Ice cream. That'll also work.
Yeah.
Yeah, not chocolate. Oh, boy. Yeah, everything's controversial. I was just thinking, you know how it's the thing is that, you know, too much salt and it'll kill you, too much sugar it'll kill you and all that. What happens if you breathe too much air?
It'll kill you.
You'll hyperventilate. You'll get vertigo. You can go unconscious. You know, I mean, if you put some air directly in your veins, it will kill you. So, therefore, people should, you know, just as we don't, you should, we should accept that, right? What happens if you drink too much water? Yeah, it'll also kill you. Or it'll take all the vitamins and minerals out of your body, wash you, you know, clean, and you just need nothingness. Right? So therefore, you know, water, you know, what happens if you eat too much food, right? It'll also kill you, right? Prabhupada tells that story of the guy who died from eating too many pakoras. And just before he died, he turned to his son and said, "At least I didn't starve to death." So it was, you know, a plus. He died following his passion. Yeah, so it's just, you know, you can take anything like that. So it's just, everything is bad, right? Yeah, material life is hazardous to health, right? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Similarly, happiness and distress is an illusion perceived by the jiva only in the conditioned or reflected state. Right? So that's the, just as the, never affected by the movement or change in the water. Right? So that's the idea about that. In reality, the jiva is Brahman, which is like the sun, and that is never affected by the reflected activities of the jiva. At the time of liberation, the jiva, freed from illusion, reverts to its original Brahman consciousness, right? The jiva. But then, if you're already Brahman, then what's the point? This is their version of how the jiva came about, right? So they don't explain these others. The other ones come about like that. You know, it's a little bit more technical. Whose philosophy is this? Do we know?
This is Pratibimba. I don't know.
Okay, but I'm just saying, when did this come up? Do we know that? No, okay. I'm just wondering if this is before or after. I think it would be after.
Actually, this Vachaspati Mishra, it's not that he just propagated. He just made some changes to original Shankara's philosophy and propagated. But Shankara was the one who told
him. Yes. Well, he probably told both, and then you get this one or the other. It's just, you know, it's like the Shris, the Vadagalai and Tengalai. They say each one of that's his philosophy, Ramanuja's. But actually, his philosophy encompassed both. But then, you know, they take up these different schools. Srila Jiva Goswami, following in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's footsteps, contends that both of these doctrines of the impersonalist are not supported by the experience of Sri Vyasadeva. Right? So the experience means that one, when he got instructed by Narad Muni, and then he sat down in meditation, then he understood how Krishna is there and he's in control of Maya, and then she's then making everything happen in the material world. So then he understood achinta beta beta tattva. Like that. This is then when it always says the experience of it means this is the point. This is evident from the analysis already presented. But in the upcoming Anuchetas, he points out the specific defects in these two theories of the Mayavad school. Wouldn't this then... Oh, okay. This is our Anucheta Prakasha. Okay, very good. Okay. A break here. We say Hare Krishna now?
Yes.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jaya Nitya Gaura Premananda ki.